This is the first of two lectures which will emphasize the contributions of St. Augustine to the areas of spiritual theology and pastoral theology. That is, we will look at selections from three of his works, from the Confessions, from a sermon on the Nativity, and from a sermon on St. John, to have a sense of both how he viewed his life. The Confessions are a wonderful opportunity to reflect on Augustine's own biography and his sense of his own past, and then to see how those experiences, how that past was lived out in the context of his ministry as bishop, how he took the insights which he acquired as his faith matured and developed, and then applied them in the context of preaching and teaching. And so there are these three texts on this page. This first lecture will consider only the first portion of the material that we have from the Confessions of St. Augustine. And then we will move on in the second lecture to consider the latter portion of these selections from the Confessions, as well as glance at the two homilies by Augustine. Let's remind ourselves very briefly of some of the important facts in Augustine's biography, which is, of course, so widely known that we don't perhaps need to say too much in detail here. Born in North Africa in Tagaste of a pagan father and a Christian mother, St. Monica, he was educated in Carthage and studied rhetoric. This means that he was initially preparing to become a lawyer, but eventually ended up focusing himself on literary pursuits. But the profession of rhetoric meant that he would have been very well trained in speech, in grammar, and to some extent in the classics, although as he was later to mention and even lament, his facility was primarily or even exclusively with Latin. He claimed not to know Greek, although he certainly must have known some. At about the age of 19, he read Cicero's Hortensius and became passionately interested in philosophy, and shortly after this became an adherent of the Manichaean religion, or sect, and he became a member of this religion for about 9 years, until he became disillusioned both with its teachings and also with the failure of a visiting Manichaean teacher named Faustus in about 383, who visited North Africa. Faustus failed to answer many of the questions that Augustine had, and shortly after this, he was about then about the age of at the age of 29, he left and left North Africa and migrated to Italy, where he initially opened a school of rhetoric in Rome, and no longer was a member of the Manichaean sect, but was still very much influenced by their teachings, their rather dualistic teachings primarily. He left Rome in order to undertake a teaching position in Milan, and there he came under the influence of the Bishop Ambrose. And by the time that he arrived in Milan, he was already expanding his reading and interests in philosophy to include especially the Neoplatonists, and found himself reevaluating his own Christian heritage. It should be mentioned during this time, Augustine had a mistress whom he had at one point considered marrying, and from whom he had a son named Adeodatus. But Augustine's mother, Monica, was very much opposed to their formalizing their relationship in marriage, and Augustine never, in fact, did marry her. In fact, as he began to reconsider the question of his Christianity, and as Christianity became more significant for him and a possible avenue for him, it was the question of his life and relationships, the question of his really his sense of his own sexual passion, and the requirement to live in continence within Christianity that to some extent held him back. We'll continue his story in the second lecture, where we'll take up his conversion to Christianity and the experience that he had in Casiciacum, where he lived in a kind of study retirement, not exactly monastic retirement. This was more along the model of an educated and wealthy intellectual of the ancient empire who would retire onto his estates to engage in philosophical pursuits and writing. Augustine did this while living in Italy, and he was joined in this retreat by his mother, some friends, and also by his son Adeodatus. But let's consider now the texts that we have taken from his Confessions. The Confessions are a remarkable book. They were regarded as remarkable and even by some rather scandalous in Augustine's own time. The idea that he would open up his heart and his past in such detail was regarded as amazing and by some rather appalling. That he would lay bare his soul seemed indelicate on one level and self-indulgent on another to some people, but he certainly created a kind of a genre of self-reflective autobiography that then became very widely imitated within Christianity. And it is really a masterpiece both of literature and of a later reflection on his own insight. The Confessions, which date from around the year 398 to 400, date from the period when Augustine was certainly a Christian, and indeed, by that time, he had already taken on responsibilities as Bishop of Hippo. He had converted to Christianity, been ordained a priest, as we shall see, and become first coadjutor, that is, assistant bishop in Hippo Regius, and then sole bishop. It was as bishop, looking back on his life, that he wrote the Confessions. So these are not, if you will, a contemporary account of his experiences at the time, but a converted man looking back on his past. And the portions with which we shall be concerned today are two sections. The one which is taken from Book 7 and beginning in Chapter 9, if you could follow along on the text, where he reveals his interest in and some of the things that he found in the Platonic texts, but also the things that were not to be found there. If you look at the beginning of Chapter 9 and then drop down a little bit further, several paragraphs, you'll see that he says, "There indeed," meaning in the writing of the Platonists, "I found that in the beginning was the Word. The Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him." All of this can be found, he says, in Platonic philosophy. But, he says, that he came to his own did not receive him, and that he gave power to become the sons of God to those who did believe, this, he says, I did not find there. I did not find in the doctrine of the Platonists. And in the next paragraph, he gives similar kinds of reflections on the fact that there is a great deal of wisdom to be found in the Platonic teaching and literature, but not the idea of the incarnation. This does not exist in Greek philosophy, and so for Augustine, this was one of the points that was both perplexing and attractive. Now, if we drop down to Book 7, Chapter 10, this is a fascinating reflection, and it is with this reflection that we're going to conclude this lecture, and it is his lecture, or his discussion, of Christ the food of the strong. In this reflection, he is still considering his Platonic past, but now he's allowing it to be influenced by, to be colored by, his awareness of Christianity that comes from later in his life, and one might even say even his pastoral concern as a bishop. He is considering the uniqueness of the Incarnation, how it was not to be found in the philosophical literature to which he was so attracted at that time, and the Incarnation is lived out both in the event and the person of Christ, but of course also in, and especially in, for the Christian, the sacraments. And so he engages, if we look at the text of Chapter 10, Book 7, with the blue bar that has a little white text, Christ, the food of the strong, he says, being admonished by these books, that is to say, by the Platonic literature, to return into myself, I entered into my inward soul, guided by you. And he says, I entered, and with the eye of my soul, I saw above my soul the immutable light. This is the Platonic rapture, the kind of contemplative vision that Plotinus describes as possible for someone who is engaged in this kind of philosophical reflection and speculation. He can, as it were, rise above himself through contemplation. And we've already seen this in looking at Plotinus. And Augustine says this happened. He saw above the eye of the soul the immutable light. And he says, as he went on, it's not light like ordinary earthly light. It was higher, he says, because it made me. He had a sense that that which he was contemplating is the author, the source of his own being. I was below it because I was made by it. And then he has a little hymn of joy to the Trinity. Then he goes on in a rather beautiful and poetic way, which we'll see repeated later in the text. You beat back the weakness of my sight. You shined forth with your dazzling beams of light, and I trembled with love and fear. There's a kind of an almost sensual sense that this contemplative experience is also the senses of the soul reaching outward in a kind of an arm-extended desire for an embrace. And then he says, I found I was far away from you in the land of unlikeness, in regione dissimilitudinis. I was in a realm of unlikeness, and it is as if I heard your voice from on high. And whether this is something he actually experienced at that time, when he was studying the Platonic philosophers, especially Plotinus, in Latin translation, not in the original Greek, in detail, or whether this is significantly colored by his Christianity is hard to say. But it is as if, he says, as if he heard the voice of God speaking to him saying, the food of the strong am I, cibus sum grandium, I am the food of the strong, grow and you shall feed on me. Not just light, but a sense of the divine as food, something on which one can feed, and only if one's willing to grow into a greater spiritual stature. But then this phrase, you shall not change me into yourself like fleshly food. Instead, you shall be changed into me, tu mutabiris in me. This is a beautiful statement of Eucharistic theosis, the notion that the Eucharist is our participation in God, and by feeding on Christ, the living bread, we are changed. God promises that this food is like unlike any other food. Normal human food we make into ourselves, but the food of the Eucharist will make us into what God is. So he's hinting that he had an insight, or perhaps a memory, because of course, remember, he was raised as a Christian and rejected his own Christianity. But as he longed for this experience of the divine, there is this kind of an echo and a sense that the God who is above the light, above all creation, is the God whom you do not change into yourself. This God will allow your feeding on him to change you into himself. And then he looks further and experiences God as saying, I am who I am, ego sum qui sum, I am who am. So God is the ground of being, but more than the ground of being, somehow present in that which can, in a sense, be sensibly appreciated. In our next lecture, we will look at, in a little more detail, at an experience he recounts of being lifted up above creation by meditating on creation, and then we will contrast and compare that with an experience which he has with his mother Monica, a similar kind of contemplative ascent, but in this second case, which takes place after he becomes a Christian, as we'll see, this is as a result of sacra colloquia, as a holy conversation concerning the things of God.